English translation, an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. And there's a purport here by our spiritual teacher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who writes, material sense pleasures are due to the contact of the material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary and is not interested in anything which is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasure, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? In the Padma Purana it said, Ramante yogino anante satyananda chid atmani. The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the Absolute Truth. And therefore, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, is also known as Rama. In the Bhagavatam, it is also said, Nayam deha deha bhajanri loke. This is a... I just picked this at random. This is something I can talk about with great authority. It says, my dear sons, there is no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the hogs. I don't know if you noticed our pod-bellied pigs running around when you came up the footpath. But I get to view them firsthand every day. So I know what pleasures are available to the hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Therefore, those who are true yogis or learned transcendentalists are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are the causes of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. So in one sense, you might think this is a pretty negative verse telling us not to be attracted to sense pleasures. And we might say, well, what's wrong with sense pleasures? A good symbol of this is the hog. We have these little pot-bellied pigs out here, and on one level, they're pretty happy guys. I mean, they don't have fits of depression. They don't have to take lithium to keep their mood up. They're pretty up all the time. And all it needs to put them up is... anything to eat. We had some visitors yesterday, and I said, do you know what hogs eat? They said, they wanted to feed them. I said, do you know what hogs eat? They said, no. I said, anything. So it doesn't take any special gourmet foodstuffs cooked by a chef from France to make them happy. And these particular type of hogs, they're different from the American hogs. Well, first of all, they're real small, and we raise them for pets. People buy them for keeping as pets, but these don't have the curly tails. They have a straight tail, and they wag their tail just like a dog. So it's pretty easy to see when they're happy is their tail's wagging just like a dog. You can make them happy with just anything, any garbage, any leftovers, just anything, and they're very, very happy. And actually, a lot of times you imagine they have a rather big smile on their face as well. So no wonder they're good pets to keep around. And here the verse says, there's another type of sense pleasure which is better than the sense pleasure that the hogs experience. Obviously, the hog's body is built in such a way that they have taste buds that'll make almost anything taste good. And we have to go to the market and we have to really search for something that we like. Or if you're a lady and you're having to cook for a finicky husband, you're always telling your friends how hard he is to please, how you have to just get everything, purchase stuff at the market just such and such, cook it just such and such, offer it in such and such a way, and then maybe he's pleased. But the hogs, they have a body given to them by material nature. There must be something really powerful on the tongue. The taste buds must just be really something else, because anything that passes over those taste buds just gives them neurological pleasure all over their body. I've seen them eat something that I thought was gross, and they enjoyed it so much that goosebumps, you can actually see the goosebumps come up all over their body. Now, if we as human beings, with all of our civilization and our brains, which are much, much bigger than those of the hogs, spend our life simply for the same pleasures that are available, for the same level of pleasure which is available to the hog, then the verdict here is that we haven't utilized the potential which is available to us, having received this human form of life. There is a kind of pleasure which has no beginning, no middle, and no end. It's a pleasure which is germane to the soul. The soul, each one of us, and this the hog can't understand. If you approach the hog and he's looking up at you and he's wagging his tail, he's waiting for you to give him something to eat, a carrot or some grains, something. If you say, I want to deliver unto you right now something that is more valuable than all the temporary sense pleasures that you experience, I want to give you transcendental knowledge whereby you'll become permanently happy. The hog will just, he cannot compute that. He's not programmed for anything higher than what he can root with his nose and upturn and masticate. So this type of pleasure, this type of knowledge is available to us only those who have a human body. My body is made of the same elements as that of the hog. You can analyze it chemically, anatomically, physiologically, and there's not a lot of difference, really. We all have the same vital organs. We share the same component elements. But I, in this human form of life, am afforded the opportunity to think, is there something higher than rolling in mud and eating stool? Is there something better than that? Only in the human form of life do these kinds of questions arise. So, having achieved the human form of life, if one never asks, if he never in the course of his life asks, is there something better than sex, eating, sleeping, and fighting? Is there something beyond these animalistic propensities? If that question never arises in his mind, then it is said he's defeated in this human form of life. And when the soul leaves his present body, it will attain that level of consciousness which corresponds to the level he's cultivated or cherished or nourished during his lifetime. So it's not entirely unlikely that that person who has a lot of sympathy with the hog, that sympathetic mood can actually lead him to take next birth and join them. Iron filings are attracted to a magnet. So those of one mentality are attracted from lifetime to life to those of a similar type of mentality. Whatever the mentality of the parents at conception, and we're not just limiting this to human parents, we're talking about any parents anywhere amongst all the various species of life. Whatever their mentality is, souls of a like mentality are attracted to the womb of the female. And during the period of pregnancy or gestation, the body is developed from within the womb with certain type of nose, certain type of smelling, certain type of eyes, certain type of hearing, certain type of tasting, which will fulfill his desires carried over from a previous life. Whatever his deserts are and whatever his desires are, they will fashion the next body. There's a story that took place when Akbar was the king of India. Akbar was not a follower of Bhagavad Gita per se. He was a mogul. But he surrounded himself with very wise men, and he was somewhat eclectic. So he was pondering some of the deeper questions of life. And he asked one of his ministers, he said, how long does sex desire last? The minister said, it lasts up until the time of death and even beyond. The minister said, sex desire can even carry you into your next body at the time of death. And Akbar thought, this can't be possible. I mean, how could that desire be so strong that an old man with arthritis and rheumatism and aches and pains and so many different bodily problems, how could he still nourish a desire for enjoying the opposite sex? How is that possible? And he disputed the minister's opinion. Surely we attain a certain level of age and wisdom where we put all this aside, where it falls by the wayside naturally. The minister said, no, how can you cultivate this mood and fuel it and nourish it during youth and then expect just to outgrow it during old age? Old age has to be more frustrating because the desire has been fanned like a fire throughout 30 or 40 years of youthhood and vigor, And if anything, when the body is old and no longer capable of fulfilling the desire itself is stronger than ever. And even someone who claims to be of as much vigor at the age of 60 and 65 as he was at 20, well, unfortunately, no one is attracted to him. He can't get a date. No matter how much he claims to be able to satisfy that date, no one wants to date him. So there are all kinds of pitfalls in this kind of sense pleasure. So this verse is not against sense pleasure, but it says that now you've achieved the human form of life, try and find that sense pleasure which doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end, which is permanent and ever-increasing and everlasting. Is that a possibility? Is that something we can try for and achieve? And, of course, the answer is yes, according to the Vedic version. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now, after transmigrating through millions and millions of lower forms of life, now I have got this human form. Now is the time. Atato Brahman. Brahman means the absolute truth. Jignasa means inquiry. Now is the time to make inquiry into the nature of the absolute truth. And Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the absolute truth, who's referred to as Krishna and Rama since time immemorial in India. Krishna means the all-attractive supreme person. Ajit and I were talking. Where are you, Ajit? Over there. Ajit's name, he's from Nepal. Nepal's still Hindu, isn't it? Basically, it's a Hindu. It's maybe the only Hindu country in the world, officially, right? Even India itself, they like to be very ecumenical and accommodating. But Nepal is... So his name, Ajit, means who has unlimited power, who cannot be conquered by anyone else. So this is an opulence, isn't it? Mike Tyson came out of jail, and so much hype. Everyone was curious. Is he more powerful? Is he less powerful? And then what a coup for him when he showed he was not less powerful, maybe more powerful. So that everyone was attracted. What is the level of his power? And we had in my generation Cassius Clay, who said, I am the greatest, and pretty much proved it until old age drained him. One fellow, he said, for this poor body that I own, I could weep many a tear. The days have carted flesh and bone and left a changeling here. I don't know if I remember. Four feeble bones are left to me. In other words, two arms and two legs, but very feeble now. And the basket of my belly. It says, I am weak and ugly now. He says, I forget the exact words. But isn't it nice, the strength, the weakness, the strength is, the swiftness flows from me. The strength is carted from my bones. You see, this is what happened to Cassius Clay. Now he's like this. He can't even hold his hand steady without shaking. So power is an opulence, and God is the most powerful. He is unlimitedly powerful, and whatever power anyone else has is just borrowed power. We borrow his power for a few years. We go into the gym. We lift weights. But where does the power actually come from? Where does the actual power come from? What you're doing in the gym is you're cultivating a certain desire, and you have a certain image of yourself. You look in the mirror, you see what you are, and you see what you'd like to be. And so you desire very strongly and heavily, I would like to have this much more here and this much more here, and then you work towards that. But actually, the power that comes to you really comes from God. And it's not permanent. It's borrowed for 60 or 70 years. Then it's gradually carted, the strength, the swiftness drained from me. You know, like if your radiator has a little leak, the radiator of your car, it doesn't, the fluid doesn't come out all at once, but drip, 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 very steadily and almost imperceptibly. You check it day by day, the level doesn't seem to have lowered, but check it after a month and it's gone. So the swiftness, the prowess, they talk about these athletes being a grand old man at the age of 34. You know, over the hill, his career is behind him. They interviewed Carl Lewis and they said, Carl, at the ripe old age of 34, how do you attribute, how do you account for still being a competitor in World Olympics? He said, mainly because of my vegetarian diet. But that's another subject matter. So Krishna means the most powerful person, whose power is unlimited and never diminished. Also the most beautiful. He's supreme. So anyone who's supreme has to be all-powerful and also unlimitedly beautiful, as well as deeply, deeply intelligent, unprecedentedly famous. These are some of the opulences of the supreme person who's called Krishna. Krishna just means all-attractive. And Rama, as was mentioned in this verse, refers to the kind of pleasure that the soul, each one of us, is not a body, but we are a soul within the body. That we're not byproducts of matter. If we were byproducts of matter, then material pleasures would be the be-all and end-all. But we're not satisfied with material pleasures. We want more and more. We want the kind of pleasure which always increases and never diminishes, unlimitedly. That we hanker for, and we're never satisfied with anything less. So from where does that desire come? It comes from the soul, which is eternal, which is unlimited, and which is capable of complete pleasure. So that hankering could not even be there were it not for the very nature of the soul itself. So Rama refers to that, Ramante Yogina Anante, beyond the temporary pleasures that are experienced by the hogs and the dogs. There is another category of pleasure, which is called Ramante Yogino Anante. Those who are yogis, and yoga means to yoke with God. When the soul yokes with the Supreme Soul, such a dynamic is set up, such a reciprocal relationship is reestablished that he begins to feel spiritual pleasure. George Harrison wrote a little preface, George Harrison the musician, about 1969. We published a book called The Krishna Book. It's all about the activities and pastimes of Krishna, or God. It's right here. One of the aspects of the all-powerful Lord is that having created this world, he can obviously appear here whenever he wants. As he sent his son, Jesus Christ, as he sent his representative, Mohammed, he also came personally, according to our information, about 5,100 years ago. And this is the chronicle of his activities. So George Harrison, he paid for the printing of this first edition. And he says that our problem is we've been conditioned to the temporary. We've been conditioned to the temporary. We've been conditioned to think that hoggish pleasures are all there are. And if I can just be a bigger and a better hog, then my life is successful. Some hogs, you know, they just eat. But some hogs, they eat and they... and you can hear the juices, the masticatory salivic juices rushing around in there. And, you know, and you can just... So most people being conditioned to the temporary think that if I can just chew more enjoyably and have sex more... often, and sleep in a more comfortable bed, and surround myself with people and bank balance and what I need to defend myself, then I've achieved all there is to achieve in life. And yet, what has he really done? He's just polished up the same pleasures which are available to the hogs. He hasn't really achieved anything more. In fact, it's less, because to get these things, we have to work hard, isn't it? Whereas the hog, I mean, he does, these hogs, you know, they don't work hard. They don't go to the office. They, you know, there's all kinds of human beings waiting for the bus here at 6 o'clock in the morning in order to get to work by 7. But there's no hogs. They don't worry about catching the bus or missing the bus. All those things come to them naturally, and they don't worry about with whom they'll have sex, mother, sister, brother. They don't care. So all these pleasures are just freely available to them. If we want to do this, we have to work very hard to get them, the same things which are freely available to the hogs. So, and then having got them, then we get to get into it even more deeply by being a hog in our next life. We get more facility. Because human beings, there's so many inhibitions, there's so many restrictions. But for the hogs and the dogs, there's no restrictions. It has sex any time of day, in public. You don't have to go behind a closed door. There won't be any policeman writing you up a ticket for indecent exposure, lewd behavior, anything. It's just that's where it's at, you know, for some people. So Akbar, anyway, to finish my story and finish the talk and ask your questions. So Akbar asked, how long sex desire lasts? And he did not believe the version of his minister. So the minister beckoned to him a few days later, said, "Don't say anything. I'm going to make a point to you. Just follow me and bring your young daughter, 16 years old, beautiful daughter." So they went through the streets of Delhi. This is about 500-600 years ago this story took place. So they went through the streets of Delhi. They went into the home where next room was an old man, only had a few minutes to live. His throat was choked up. He was burning with fever. He was emaciated, sunken cheeks, everything. Unable to articulate. The power of speech had already left him. Power of smelling had left him. Power of hearing had left him. Only he could see. And in a few minutes, the dimness would come. He would be shrouded in darkness and go to the next life. So, the minister said, "We're going into this room. Now, you go in, the most powerful king of the world, Akbar, with $1 million worth of jewels and his crown and a coat and all the charisma that a man who's used to snapping his fingers and sending whole armies forth, you know, who excavates cities and destroys cities with a movement of his eyebrow, all that shakti, all that power walks in the room." The minister says, "When you walk in the room, you take your young girl, you know, 16 years old, like a high school cheerleader, you know, maybe Miss Payson or something, you know, and see where the eyes go. See, look at his eyes. See which way he's attracted." So they walked in the room side by side. Akbar, one of the most powerful kings within the last 5,000 years, and his little pom-pom, you know, just cheerleader daughter. The man's eyes, what vision he had left, in what few seconds he had left, went immediately to the young girl and fixed themselves there, studiously ignoring his king and ruler, hoping to squeeze just a little more pleasure out of the last few moments of his life. So based on deserve and desire, what would you think his next life would be? I mean, logically, is it a great leap? Is it a great a disjointed, unsequential process of rationalization to see him as taking such a birth in his next life to fulfill that desire which he harbored and carried with him at the last moment of his previous life? And if it was sex that he wanted and he didn't get enough in this present life, then what accommodation would be made by his karma and by material nature so that he could more fulfill his desires in the next life? Not a human birth. Definitely not a human birth. That's not the birth for getting the most, fulfilling the most promiscuous desires. Pigeons, 60, 70 times a day for a male pigeon, a mouse, a rabbit, you see? The desires is fulfilled. That's what we have to watch out for. Not some God, you know, cruel judge type guy in the sky, ticking off our goods and our bads, and if there's more bads than goods, throwing us into hell forever where we burn in a lake of fire. That, you know, that I used to laugh at that. You know, that didn't make me good. You know, I'd thumb my nose at him. "Do your worst. You know, I can take it." But when I think that I may cultivate such base desires that I might become in my next life one of those pot-bellied pigs, that's a deterrent. That's a deterrent. So it's not that, you know, I'm going to give up sense pleasures. It's not that I'm going to give up sex or give up eating, give up sleeping, or give up wrestling and contests and strength. But I'm going to elevate it to the transcendental platform. Say, I'm not going to eat anything indiscriminately like the hawk, but I'm going to eat vegetarian, non-flesh foods which have been offered to Krishna on the altar, karma-free foods which carry no reaction. I'm not going to stop dancing, but I'm not going to go to the discotheque, you know, listen to the top 40, which change every week. I'm not going to go for that kind of changing, the carrot in front of the nose type pleasure. which promises, 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 but never delivers. I'm going to dance right here in the temple. And even historically speaking, people have been dancing in front of the deities of Krishna for hundreds of thousands of years on this planet. Before Krishna appeared, people had the images of the Lord, and they were dancing in front of the image. And when he appeared, they said, oh, he's here. We've been worshiping for so many years, so many hundreds, so many generations, so many temples in India. That Lord who we've been worshiping, he's come. He stays here for us on earth for a couple hundred years, then he goes back. So as we have been worshiping him, as we are worshiping now, we continue to worship him. Even historically, worship of Krishna is the longest plane, the longest run, the longest top 40 hit going back tens of thousands of years. And the temples have been the most popular dance halls without any fail over eons and eons and eons and millennia. And the food of Krishna has been tasted and relished for hundreds of thousands of years. And that's only on this plane. In the spiritual kingdom, there are also meals that are cooked and served made of spiritual substance. There are dances which are held. There are transcendental cows which can yield not only milk, but anything that a devotee desires in order to serve the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. In the spiritual world, Plato used to say this material world is only a reflection of the spiritual world. So there are rivers, there are oceans, there are trees, there are birds, there are people in the spiritual world, but there's no matter. Everything is fully conscious. Everything is fully liberated. A peach tree in this material world can only give you peaches. But a tree in the spiritual world can give you peaches, apples, oranges, mangoes. It can give you a drum. It can give you a harmonium. It can give you flowers. Because it's conscious. It's a living being, right? You ask me, whatever, you ask me for a variety of things, because I can get it and give it to you. So the trees are not covered with dull, dead, inert matter, bark and leaves. They only look that way, but they can give you anything you want. So it may look like this world, but it is of a different caliber altogether. Sugar cane and bamboo look just the same. But you try to bite bamboo, you break your teeth. You just break your teeth. You bite sugar cane, oh, so much juice. So we are made for enjoyment. We are made for pleasure. But when we try to get pleasure out of this bamboo-like material, sense pleasure, we just break our teeth. We end up old and toothless, looking at some young cheerleader with our tongue hanging out, drooling. And our life is defeat. But when we take the sugar cane of Krishna consciousness, chant the holy name of the Lord, eat his pure prasadam, participate and serve in the helping out, put on the festivals to glorify him. There are so many unlimited activities. There's so much employment. There's so much engagement available that if we simply take advantage of this, this is guaranteed taste, that nectar for which we're always anxious, that nectar which has no beginning, which has no end. It's eternal. It's the very nature of our soul. It's called Rama, or unlimited transcendental pleasure.